This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
I also made it very clear that we look forward to a open dialogue with Congress and the American people about the threat, and that not only will we consult with the United States Congress, we being the administration, but that my administration will fully participate in any hearings that the Congress wishes to have on this subject.
With the camera shutters snapping, President Bush speaking from the White House Wednesday after meeting with congressional leaders to talk over the possibilities of a military strike against Saddam Hussein. Dan Shore is back, looking fit and fresh from his vacation. Nice to see you again, Dan.
Thank you, Scott. And a moment of full disclosure. Because of the Jewish New Year on Saturday, we are recording on Friday. I thought our public should know.
A week ago, the Bush administration, in fact, produced a White House counsel's memo to support the idea that they didn't need to consult Congress, much less gain any action from Congress if they were going to make any military moves against Iraq. This has changed. Why do you think so?
Well, I think that the president needed to extricate himself from a corner he had backed himself into. Here he had a split administration, a skeptical Congress, rather dubious allies, no very good staging area in the region for an attack on Iraq. And so what he does is to pass the ball to Congress, which will now hold several weeks of hearings, and that will buy the president time to work on friendly persuasion. And if he doesn't succeed in getting his friendly persuasion, it opens an escape route where he turns around and says, gee, I would have done it, but the Congress wouldn't let me.
He also seems to be more interested in international support. Now previously, that just meant Prime Minister Blair of England, but he's been on the phone this week with leaders in Russia, China, and France,
right.
and of course, is going to appear before the United Nations next week.
That's right. That's a more than commonly important speech that the president will be making next Thursday, is it, to the UN. He's trying to get a mandate from the Security Council that he knows he will not get, because there are three potential vetoes. He called the leaders of Russia, China, and France, as you say, and in every case he found out that they would oppose an invasion or armed action against Iraq. Now, the president may try some interim measure like reviving the weapons inspection system with a deadline, perhaps now with a protective force also. But the chances of getting Security Council endorsement of invasion, he knows, are very slim. So, in effect, what he's now doing with Congress and the Security Council is he's submitting the whole Iraq question to a national and an international referendum. And if he loses, well, don't blame him. He did his best.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't that exactly, though, what people thought he was trying to avoid a few weeks ago?
That's right, because he at that point he thought he might do it, but when he realized that it's almost unfeasible to go almost unilaterally into another country with no country around that will let you stage your troops or anything like that, and because his whole administration was split on the question, he just couldn't go ahead.
At the heart of this, obviously, seems to be the contention by people in the administration that the threat from Saddam Hussein in Iraq is not just hypothetical, but is imminent. Congressional leaders were briefed this week by Vice President Cheney and the director of the CIA, George Tenet, and they did not come out of that meeting sounding as if they were necessarily convinced.
No, they weren't. I mean, I don't know what they were told, and I hope they managed to keep it secret for a change. But the fact of the matter is, if they're looking for something called a smoking gun or a silver bullet, which comes out of a smoking gun, I guess, they have not yet found it. And his main problem is he doesn't have an open and shut case for why we have to go into Iraq with all the other problems we have around the world.
Mention other problems, and Afghanistan resurfaced as an area that needs U.S. attention this week with a failed assassination attempt against Afghan President Hamid Karzai and a couple of bombings which resulted in killing more than 20 people there in Kabul.
Yes.
Did those events in any way frustrate American appetite for involvement?
Well, that's very interesting because we keep being reminded how hard it is to get stability in a country that is prone to civil war and feuds among warlords. America's being asked now to contribute more troops to Afghanistan. The administration is passing on that request to NATO allies. But this raises the question of how America can possibly consider going into its next war when the last one isn't really quite finished yet. Does stability in Afghanistan now depend on assassins who can't shoot straight? That's a very, very small reed to lean on.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask about events in the Middle East, because on the eve of the Jewish New Year, Israeli checkpoint guards intercepted a vehicle carrying what's called a mega bomb. This was 1,300 pounds of explosives. It might have resulted in hundreds, even thousands of casualties had it gone off. Soon thereafter, Israeli helicopters attacked a suspected bomb factory in the Gaza Strip. Has this become a perpetual state of conflict without any end?
Well, to say perpetual is really to give up on it, and I'm very loath to do that. But the fact of the matter is that every day gives us a measure of violence, you know, and one has to recall on this day that this, what's called the Intifada or the Second Intifada, started on the Hebrew New Year 2 years ago after Ariel Sharon, who was not yet prime minister, protected by troops, visited a holy place on the Temple Mount. So this is quite an anniversary.
After a ceremonial session in New York this week, Congress comes back to an awful lot of unfinished business. There's 13 appropriations for the next fiscal year, the Homeland Security Department, medical, pharmaceuticals. There were so many hopes after September 11th that Congress would be united and more resolved to fulfill the national interest. What happened to those hopes?
Well, what happened? What happened to the country? There was at first a lot of applications or inquiries by people about joining the Peace Corps, joining the Marine Corps, but they didn't get a great many applications. The thing kind of die down after a while. What September 11 has done is not to unify Congress, except for the very first week after the attacks, but what it's done is to add a new agenda to an already overloaded calendar for Congress. We have this problem now. First of all, they just passed a bill to arm pilots. They're still talking about the Homeland Security Department. They're talking about airport security. There are the money-strapped states, which can't seem to get money that they need very badly. And then there is a partisan consideration of whether you want to have $1 billion here or there or whether you want an election issue. It is Congress as usual, but I must say, it's sort of Congress as more than usual.
And let me ask the question we're going to be hearing a lot in the week to come, have already begun to hear. A year after the terrible attacks in New York, Washington, D.C., and in Pennsylvania last year, how have we, the American people, changed, gotten wiser, become more frightened, become more emboldened? Where do we stand a year after?
Well, we certainly have become more nervous. We certainly have become more vulnerable, or at least a feeling of vulnerability, which is something new for this nation. And that first burst of patriotic sacrifice seems to be dwindling. If I have to put it in a word, and I really hate being the person who judges a moment in history like this, but let me say it. I think that we have become a much sadder, but not necessarily much wiser nation.
Thanks very much, Dan Shore.